The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand or portfolio so easy it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Like Piers Morgan's bags, it's Football Weekly. Today, the weekend, Chelsea stay top, City struggle with Stoke, and Virgini suicides at the Emirates as Arsenal cop a lot of goals. Giroud back to doing what he does best, taking advantage of visitors, scoring, grabbing a fine pair, etc. and so on. We round up all the action home and abroad, call up our friend Sid in Spain, talk about Milan's Moroccan roll, look at the midweek Champions League games, all the usual pod fun and posts in this Football Weekly. Yes, for you, listener, the holiday is over. Many thanks to Dave Farrar for his outstanding work in the last week. Bring a bit of gravity and sincere humility to his role as to stand in host of Football Weekly. I'm delighted to be back. Lovely to see you, Barry. How have you been?
I've been very well, thanks. How was your holiday?
Yeah, it was great. And yet, at the same time, empty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's slightly inappropriate of you, of all people, to make fun of somebody losing a well-paid job on television.
Yeah. Well, when one door opens, Piers...
God never closes a door without opening a window.
Yeah, he may be, some time about opening that other window, but hang in there. That's my advice.
You'll always have Football Weekly, Jimbo.
Absolutely. If anyone offers you a podcast, Piers, my advice is snap it up. Hey, Sean.
Hello.
Hey, lovely to see you as well. And also joining us today, Fernando Duarte. Just kidding, listeners. It's jaunty Ian McCourt. How are you doing, Ian?
Hey, Jimbo. I'm good. How are you?
Very great. You've had 2 weeks of Sochi.
I have.
Wow.
Very much so.
Wow.
I did something very bad in a previous life and was forced to make up for it by live blogging.
You fell asleep at the Emirates during a game.
Yes.
Which game was that?
When they beat Blackpool a couple of seasons ago.
Arsenal.
I think it was 6-0 maybe or 6-1.
All right.
And Theo Walcott got a hat trick. And
a dull game. Yeah. This,
we were in the executive boxes.
Right.
That's why. And we'd had a few beers.
Okay.
And it was a nice sunny afternoon, and I just decided to nod off for a few months.
Oh, good for you. Now, you were at the Emirates this Saturday.
Yes.
Barry, to see the Arsenal Sunderland game.
Yeah.
Any thoughts?
I thought Sunderland were incredibly poor. They were a goal down after about 4 minutes, gifted 3 goals to Arsenal before the interval and barely touched the ball, really. It was my mates who I was with, I described it to him as like watching somebody doing embroidery, the way Arsenal is just really intricate passing movements, totally eviscerated Sunderland, and only their usual attempts at over-elaboration prevented it being a hockey score by... Or a cricket score, even.
Cricket score.
Hockey scores generally aren't that high.
Could be quite low.
Cricket score.
Right.
By half time.
Right. Were you in the executive boxes?
No, I was with the riffraff in the clock end.
Right. To what do you attribute Sunderland's very un-Poyet team-esque performance?
Well, they're just not really very good, to be honest. And Arsenal, I think they were on the receiving end of Arsenal trying to... bounce back from their defeat at the hands of Bayern Munich, and I suspect a lot of their players, Sunderland's players, also have had one eye on the cup final next weekend.
Coming up next weekend.
And if they play like that again in the cup final against Manchester City, they will get embarrassed, annihilated.
All right. Anything you boys want to add about Arsenal?
We keep thinking they're not going to win the league, and I still don't. I thought they were impressive on Saturday. I think the crunch will come in mid March when they got Spurs away, Chelsea away, Man City at home, and Everton away in 4 games in a row.
Ozil came out of the team and Giroud went back into it, Ian.
Yeah, I never know how to feel about Giroud. I mean, he's this kind of magnificent looking man with this great sweeping hair and hulking body, but when he gets on the field, he scores. Like for his goal record, for instance, I was just checking out before we came in. So he took his 2 goals very well. There's no question about that. But if you look at how he's done against, it's only Sunderland. If you look at how he's done against any of the big sides like Chelsea, City, Liverpool, I think he's got maybe 1 goal against the kind of bigger sides, which is the same amount as Carlton Cole.
Wow.
But I'm slightly perturbed by Ian's description of Giroud as some sort of great romantic
as Mills if Mrs. Giroud didn't have enough to be worried about at the moment.
Listeners, we all chuckle together with that. Now, I come back to discover that everyone's saying, can Liverpool win the title? Can they? As far as I'm aware, the big thing that's happened is they beat Swansea 4-3. Have I missed something?
Yes and no. I mean, you've got to remember, they are only 4 points off the league.
Right, and three places.
And yeah, but that's irrelevant, really.
But it's not really, is it? Because there's three teams ahead of them that they have to get past.
But still, the way the fixtures are running, if they were to win, and it's unlikely, I know, the rest of their games.
All right, give me five reasons why Liverpool can win the league. And you're allowed to start with fixtures as one of them.
Five is pushing it. I mean, I don't think they won the league, but clearly Suarez and Sturridge together is a reason. Sturridge has scored 8 in a row.
Right, he's got 18 in 19. And Suarez is now top of the assists as well as top of the goal scoring.
Absolutely. So, you know, with those in the team, they've got a chance. And the flip side, you've got to look at their defence.
Oh, well, we're still doing the reasons why they can. You mentioned the fixtures because they've got those fixtures at home. Here's another one. They've only got 11 games left this season.
Colatore is going to hold them back, isn't he?
Is that it?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
But the fixture list, though, I do think it's been slightly overplayed. I mean, I look at their fixtures, you know, they've got Southampton away. That's a tough fixture. Then they've got Manchester United away. Historically, perhaps a tough fixture. Then they've still got Spurs to play at home, Man City to play at home, Chelsea to play at home.
Mm. But those are opportunities for them to take points off their direct rivals.
But I think you look at Chelsea's fixture list, it's, I think, by far the easiest in the league. They've only got to play three of the current top 10 left. So the games they've got Chelsea, they've got Spurs, they've got Arsenal, both at home, and then they go to Liverpool right at the end of the season. But the rest of it, you'd think they would. You know, they would win quite easily. So I think it's still a big ask for Liverpool to win the league.
So no to Liverpool winning the title, but we can just enjoy them in the meantime.
To be honest, they remind me a little bit of Kevin Keegan's Newcastle.
I wondered if you were going to say that.
But I mean, I don't think they're ever going to be...
another classic 4-3 at Anfield team.
But I don't think they're ever going to be the neutral's favourites just because they won so much, you know, in the 70s and 80s. Mm. There's a lot of people that have that natural antipathy towards them. But they are playing some glorious football at the moment.
But with so much boring football on at the moment, I think just enjoy watching them. Because, I mean, right, Suarez, Sturridge, Coutinho, Sterling are a joy to watch. And so, for entirely different reasons, are Skrtel, Agger, Colatore and Ali Sissoko. And, you know, you've games like, oh God, Newcastle Villa yesterday was just...
memorably described by Georgina Turner as like watching a couple of 2 a.m. drunks repeatedly scraping their front door keys around the lock.
Well, brilliant, yeah. And, you know, people are paying good and lots of good money to go and see those games and they're not getting entertained. The atmosphere at the Emirates on Saturday was so flat. Now, some of the football on show was excellent. Mm. And perhaps the crowd were just hypnotised and entranced by Arsenal's passing. But, you know, when you see flat atmospheres like that, and, you know, it was almost complete silence at St. James's Park yesterday, from as far as I could tell from just watching it on TV anyway. And, yeah, so just enjoy Liverpool and the league table will take care of itself.
But you could throw a couple of others into Baz's mix. I mean, the Norwich Spurs game, while having a reasonable atmosphere, was a shocking, shocking game. Chelsea Everton was all right, but you sort of always suspected it was going to be a 1-0 or 0-0 type of game, the way Chelsea set up.
Right, whereas Liverpool, I mean, they had a terrific performance at home against Everton and did that massive number on Arsenal. And there were so many delights in this. Henderson, I like the business-like way that he goes. He's a very unflashy dribbler, no? He kind of gets past people like a man on a Christmas shopping expedition on a crowded high street or something.
That's probably something to do with his peculiar gait.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, well, Liverpool, we love them. Good. Next up for them, it's Southampton away. And as you mentioned before, Man United away. Both could be very entertaining games. And they're pretty much, are they certain now of top four after that Norwich defeat for Spurs?
You'd certainly think so. 6 points clear. They still have to play Spurs, of course, but... the way it's looking, absolutely.
Mm. Well, we mentioned Arsenal bouncing back. Man City struggled again at home to Stoke. They've only scored one goal in their last three Premier League appearances, Man City.
That's true, although Sergio Aguero is back in full training today. And I mean, that can't...
Will he be ready for Sunderland?
You would hope so.
Would you hope so, Barry?
No, I'm sure
you
would hope so.
Right. And on top for now, were you raising a finger?
Well, I was going to say Dzeko had the miss of the season in that match.
Was that the miss of the season? Or did Roberto Soldado's in the Europa League just scrape it?
Yeah, that was pretty bad too.
All right then. Now, top of the table for the moment are Chelsea, thanks to their 3 points gained late on in the game with Everton, which, Sean, you were saying wasn't a very interesting game at all.
No, it was interesting to watch, but it wasn't a kind of a thriller. You knew perhaps how it was going to be tight. And it's very interesting when you look at Chelsea now unbeaten in the last 13 since they got beaten 3-2 at Stoke. Mourinho changed things around. Since then, they've won 10, drawn 3. They've scored 20 and only conceded 4. And if you look at Mourinho's first 13 games ever at Chelsea, that season where he just basically had the Makaleli done everything, they only conceded 4 in their first 13. They kept 24 clean sheets. Their record is very similar to theirs. You know, they've changed it around. They're keeping it very tight, not giving anything away, and nicking the odd goal here and there. And given they have the easiest fixture, I mean, I still think Manchester City have the best team, but I think Chelsea perhaps have the slight best chance of winning the league as things stand.
But they were very poor on Saturday, from what I've seen. But, you know, midfield were ponderous and sluggish. James McCarthy did a great job on Eden Hazard. And once again, their strikers proved pretty impotent.
Well, next up, anyway, for Chelsea is a trip to Turkey to take on Galatasaray at Barry.
The Turk Telecom Arena.
With its
Istanbul.
Famously removable pitch, as we saw in the Crucial Group game against Juventus.
Yeah,
they were a little bit fortunate to get through, I thought, Galatasaray. I know that they did give Real Madrid some problems last year.
Well, they beat Juventus and drew with them in the group stages, so I wouldn't say that's particularly fortuitous.
Well, no, I think what was fortuitous was the manner of the results.
Yeah, okay, results. Fair enough.
Are you anticipating, Sean? You're frowning. Like,
no, I'm just. I look at Juventus and when I've seen them play, I'm incredibly impressed by them. And you do still wonder how Galatasaray managed to wriggle their way through. And I think if they didn't have that pitch, they perhaps wouldn't have managed to eke out.
We'll never know. But can they do a similar number on Chelsea?
Over two legs, I would suspect not. But they at least have a weapon or two that could cause Chelsea problems. But
let's talk about that weapon.
That 36-year-old...
He was crucial in the first game, the game in Turin.
He was, but I remember when Galatasaray got to the knockout stages this time last year, people were talking them up, got Drogba, we know we've got Schneider, and actually they were rather swatted aside, and I'm not suggesting that Chelsea would necessarily do that, but over the two legs I think there will be a little bit...
Even with a European mastermind like Mancini on the bench? He said with a note of irony.
Even with a...
Okay.
Well, Ian Hawkey from The Times was at the Galatasaray's match against Beşiktaş on Friday or Saturday, which they won 1-0, and Slaven Bilic is the manager of Beşiktaş at the moment, and he was asked afterwards how should Chelsea go about beating them. So his suggestion was that they need to cut out the men in the middle, cut off the supply from defence to forward. Philippe Melo, Wesley Sneijder and Selçuk İnan. And there's an excellent comedy own goal on the Guardian website scored by him quite recently.
Oh, yeah.
Which, if you put his name in an own goal, you'll find it.
How do we spell that name, Barry?
Selçuk İnan. But basically, the goalkeeper is going to punt the ball down the field and İnan is walking up the pitch. And the ball just hits, he's completely oblivious to this, the ball hits his heel and arcs up in the air, back over the keeper and into the net. It's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. Well, looking forward to that game. Now, plenty of other things to talk about. We're going to go a little bit European in the next part, with talk of Man United, Olympiacos, Spain, Germany, other stuff too. Producer Ben wants to know if Didier Drogba scores against Chelsea, whether his celebration will be any more or less muted than Jorginho Silva's against Liverpool the weekend. Which a lot of people had issue with, but I thought it was perfectly fine. It was extraordinary the cop gave him, or the Anfield applauded him. Of course he's not going to celebrate. He saluted their salute.
Let's be honest, Jim, but if we decided we didn't want him anymore and then you joined the Times podcast and then the Times podcast happened to win a Sony or something, you would, on that stage, you'd be giving it the right fist to Barry and I, wouldn't you?
It's an interesting scenario that you paint there.
Yeah, contract negotiations coming up. Just thought I'd throw it up there.
Right. But would you be applauding me? If you were applauding me, I certainly wouldn't do any gesture like that.
I would applaud you because you deserve it.
Oh, thanks, Sean. Anyway, enough about me fisting you and Barry for now. Let's talk about Europe. What would you like to talk about Europe, John Deere McCourt?
Oh, the Dortmund Zenit game.
Yeah.
Tomorrow night.
You in your skinny jeans and your Dortmund minute by minute.
Where do you live? You live in Hackney, don't you?
Yeah, East London.
And I know you're not wearing them today, but you do have a pair of sort of ironic spectacles, though, you with extra thick
rims. No, they're proper spectacles. Sure. I need them for my racer bike.
Okay. Well, you mentioned your bike. Does it have brakes on it and gears?
Yes, it does. It's a normal. It's a normal racer.
All right. Well, tell us anyway.
I did have a fixie, but that's now been sold.
Right. Even though you're scarcely qualified, you can tell us anyway about Dortmund's game against Zenit St. Petersburg.
Yeah, the hipster clash of the week. Mm. Cause just in my research for it, I was just looking at how far behind Dortmund are in the league. Which is incredible. And then I was kind of thinking, well, that's not so much an indictment on Dortmund, just more of a sign of how good Bayern have been this season. I still think they've got...
Although Dortmund have really run into problems. I mean, they've lost more times this season already than they did in the entire last campaign. And bizarre this weekend, Hamburg, who I think had 7 straight defeats, leading to Bert van Marwijk's dismissal, brought in Mirko Slomka. And bingo, was it 3-0?
3-0.
3-0.
Yeah, they hammered them.
So they've really got problems. And the funny thing was that previously they had all their defenders were out and that's what was going wrong, but they've been coming back and they're still not getting the results.
Well, I think their home form has been pretty poor, but until this defeat against Hamburg, they're one of the best in the Bundesliga. And I think only Bayern have scored more goals and only Bayern and Leverkusen have conceded fewer. So you don't become a bad team overnight. And they're going to be playing a Zenit team that haven't played since they lost 4-1 to Austria Vienna back in December. So they've had 2 months off.
Wow.
They barely scraped through to this with 6 points.
Zenit
in their group. Like, that's a record low total.
They should be called Nadir St. Petersburg.
And they're a horrible team. And the sooner they're out of the tournament, the better.
Oh, you're referring to their unpleasant fans, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think certain parts of their stadium will be closed to fans. And there's going to be delays for everyone getting in because the section of their stadium that's normally occupied by the ultras will be closed. So they're going to monitor everyone on their way in, apparently, to make sure the ultras don't get to sit elsewhere.
So what you're saying is that one circle in the stadium will remain closed. That's a Russian tradition, isn't it?
Is this...
This is an Olympic joke. Come on! All right, it's only 2 weeks old. Hey, you mentioned Bayern and their dominance. Amazing stat here from one Archie Rintut, who says, indication of Bayern's dominance, their 19-point lead in the Bundesliga is more than the leads in Italy, France, Italy and Spain combined.
Amazing.
Boom. Not as big as in Greece, of course, where Olympiakos can sell off their top scorer, Mitroglou, and still romp away with things.
Was it 26 points?
Is it? Is it 26?
Oh, I have it here.
Oh, is it 23
now? Yeah, 23 points.
23?
Yeah. All They've right. yet to lose all season.
Wow.
Only drawn twice.
Did you know that Porto this weekend lost their first home game in 5 years?
And the fans were very angry about it.
I can imagine they were. Yeah.
Isn't that bonkers, though? I mean,
what, the fans being angry?
No. But just, I remember growing up, and teams would lose to other teams, and it happened. I just think it's wrong. They think the level of competition is so unequal that a team can go 5 years without losing the home. That's not right.
Celtic and Rangers haven't lost either.
Have they not?
No. All season.
Anyway, we were just talking about Olympiakos, which would be...
Sorry, but...
Yeah. More relevant because they're playing Man United, but go
no,
on.
No, I just want to point out Borussia Dortmund, if I could go back to them briefly. Sven Bender has joined their long list of casualties.
Again.
Alongside Neven Subotic and Jakub Blauszkowski.
Right.
Who are both out for the season. He's going to be
with
out.
With mangled surnames or what?
Yes, mangled surnames. And Bender has an inflamed... pubic bone,
which nobody wants. Nobody wants that kind of thing. But in better news, Ian,
Marco Reus came on at halftime.
All right, that's probably more than you wanted to know about that game. You're probably saying, "Tell us about good old Man United and their clash with Olympiakos." So, how about we dial up Sid Lowe, who's only been to Athens last week and talked to the Spaniard in charge of said Greek runaway league leaders, Michelle. Sid Lowe, is that you?
Hello, Jimbo. Yes, it's me. How are you doing?
I'm very well. How are you?
Not too bad, thank you, yeah.
You went to the Greek capital last week.
Yeah, I went to see see their manager, Michel, who, of course, is a Spaniard, to talk about Manchester United. And it was very interesting. I had a bit of time at the training ground in the morning, went up to the stadium in the evening. And I think there's a sense, while they're being very cautious about this, and while more than anything else, there's real excitement about playing United because they're such a big club. And I think sometimes in England, we sort of forget kind of emotionally how significant clubs like United and Liverpool are to fans in other countries. But I think there's a sneaking feeling that they might just about be able to do something.
Really? Really? Well, they lost Mitroglou, who was the big scorer, and they romped to second place in what was a reasonably testing group, PSG, Benfica and Anderlecht.
Mm.
But that doesn't seem to have slowed them down at all.
Well, I mean, the Mitroglou departure, I think they've looked at that as something that's inevitable because of the financial value of it. I think it was it a 13 million euro deal, I think, in the end. And so Olympiacos had very little choice but to let him go, and it is a significant loss for them. The way that Michel put it, though, was to say, well, yeah, that's the way it is. We take good players off the other clubs in Greece as well, because bear in mind, this is the biggest club in Greece, the most supported club in Greece, and by far and away the club with the most money. I think they've only failed to win the league twice in the last, I think it's on like 16, 17 years. They've won two doubles in a row. So I think they recognise that it's hurt them, but I don't think they see it as a key issue. Although supporters that I spoke to, not people at the club, were saying it's such a pity because he's a really, really good player.
But they haven't exactly suffered since he left because they've scored 13 goals in their last three games.
Yeah, it's curious though, because talking to people there and actually talking even to Mitchell during the time when the tape wasn't off, I think there is a sense that because they win the league and they win it relatively easily or have done for the vast majority of the last 15 years, it's almost as if that's great and obviously that's really good for confidence and so on, but it doesn't necessarily mean it can be taken into the Champions League. And I think there's a sense that's really what they have to achieve to feel like they've achieved something really big. I must confess, I can't remember the guy's name, but when Michel came in, he was league champion within 5 weeks. He came in February of last year. I think they tied up the league mathematically in March. And he said afterwards, Michel, that, you know, this isn't really my success. This is the previous manager's success, and the player's success is not really about me. But I think I'm right in saying that the manager had been sacked essentially because there was a sense that they hadn't performed well enough in Europe, and so that's really the thing that they'll be measured by this year. But the fact that they're in knockout stages is already as far as they've ever gone. They've never won a knockout game before. They've reached a quarter final against Juventus, but that was when the format was that you went straight into the quarter final from the group.
Right. So is it Javier Saviola who'll be the big danger man in Mitroglou's absence?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's the main striker now. I was talking to them about how they'll play, and of course they talk about being very ambitious, being very aggressive, trying to go for United, but I'm not entirely sure how that will manifest itself in terms of the players. But they've got Chori Dominguez, they've got Javier Saviola.
What do you think is going to happen, Sid? What's your feeling, having been there on the ground?
Well, I this is a feeling based on people's emotions there. I think Olympiacos will be probably slightly better than we assume.
Uh-huh.
And you know, they look at it from the point of view of the way United have been struggling perhaps in the Premier League. And you know, are Olympiacos a worse side, for example, than Fulham or Stoke or something like that? Maybe not.
Right. Can they do it?
There is a feeling that they'd be probably a mid-table team in the Premier League. But I say that purely based on what, you know, on how they feel rather than based on having seen Olympiacos. I cannot claim to be an expert of Olympiacos.
All right, Sid, let's go to your chosen topic then, which is Spanish football.
As you said, my chosen specialist subject.
Yeah.
Someone was on Mastermind the other night and had FC Barcelona as their subject.
Right, well, that's fair enough.
It's quite fun, yeah. They got eight, and then someone very kindly sent me the DVD, and I watched it without knowing the questions, and I only got one better, so I was feeling a bit silly.
I only got one better, says Sid. right, okay. So
quite a lot wrong, by the way. I mean, you say I only got one better.
You
I got quite
get
a lot wrong.
14 or 15, really, particularly if you've written the club's history.
Exactly.
I have no idea how many questions are involved, is it?
Well, a good score in your specialist subject is about 14.
No, what specialist subject would you take, Barry?
It depends how long the questions are as well, because some of the questions were very long and taking up precious time.
Right, and the answers, that would be a factor as well, wouldn't it?
Well, you see, I think what they do on Mastermind is if you've picked a specialist subject that they think is a bit too easy, they will make the questions longer so you don't get as many.
Right.
Harsh.
Okay. Sid, anyway, Spanish football, Real Madrid went top. Atletico Madrid lost against Osasuna. Yep. And Tata Martino's lost the dressing room.
That's certainly the way it looks. A 9-point weekend for Real Madrid with those two teams both losing. I must confess, I did think that both Atletico Madrid and Barcelona would drop points this weekend, but I didn't think they'd both be beaten. And I certainly didn't think they'd both concede three and be beaten so comfortably, because both Osasuna and Real Sociedad were miles better than both Atletico Madrid and Barcelona. The Real Sociedad game comes off the back of a cup game which was extremely tense, so I think Barcelona must have known that it was going to be difficult, at least in terms of atmosphere and aggression and so on the pitch. But they were completely undone. And as you say, the fact that Tata Martino made six changes from the Man City game, and not just changes in terms of personnel, but I think changes that altered the style and the approach. To judge by some of the Catalan media, I think that there's a very strong hint that he's lost some of the dressing room. And the reason I say that is that if you read between the lines and if you think about which people have written which pieces, I think there's no doubt that some of the kind of sense of criticism directed at Martino has come from the dressing room. This weekend, for example, he played Busquets and Song in midfield, and Song was poor again, although I think it's been a little bit opportunistic the way everyone's laid into Song as if he's responsible for everything that goes on around him, although I don't think he's a great player, to be honest. And it just felt like it wasn't right. Xavi Hernandez was on the bench, Cesc Fabregas was on the bench, Messi was ambling about doing nothing, Neymar did nothing, and Barcelona were really pretty poor. And I think on top of the fact that this week they've decided to pay some money back to the Spanish taxman, while still saying they're not actually guilty, but you're just giving the taxman money for fun, it's a bit of a mess.
Right. But it is bizarre, because just last week they'd beaten Man City,
yeah,
they were
exactly.
Still top of the pile.
I think that's one of the reasons why the reaction's been so furious to this. I mean, personally, I think the reaction's a bit over the top. But I think it's partly because there was this sense that after the Man City game, right, you've got it right, everything's in place, there's a real sense of clarity now about how you approach the rest of the games this season and so on. And to then completely turn to something that looks very, very different. And Martino, to be fair to him, and I actually think he's been very impressive this year in this sense, after the game said that it was all his fault and that he made lots and lots of mistakes.
All right, fair enough. Atleti, in the meantime, Diego Simeone say we have to applaud Osasuna. They have the chance to climb back level with Real Madrid because they've got the derby next weekend, haven't they?
Yep, they have, and that's going to be really exciting. Sunday at 5 o'clock at the Calderon. Of course, I suppose now we're back in a position where should Atletico win this, we could have all three teams level on points again. But that's a 3-point lead now for Real Madrid. I think it's really quite a big deal. Atletico just never really got started, and that they, a little bit like Barcelona, it almost felt like part of the problem was that they approached the game differently to the way they've approached games all season. And on the one hand, it looks quite a good thing to do because they're a bit more attacking, they seem to want to play slightly more creative players and perhaps be a little less solid defensively, but they just got taken apart, and they conceded two, I think, inside something like 15 minutes or so, and they just were never ever in the game, Atletico.
Barry, we never found out who your specialist subject would be.
Oh, I think it'll probably be the works of P.G. Woodhouse.
Really?
Or James Herriot.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, not but Sean. This is a bit much to spring in you, isn't it?
Never given much thought. Maybe the history of the heavyweight championship of the world.
Really? Boxing? All right. Jaunty?
I'm trying to think.
Hoxton
coffee shops would be one strong topic. Also, maybe rap music or...
Rap music?
Or James Joyce, I think one
rap
of those two.
Rap music? Yeah. Well, that's an interesting combination of James Joyce.
Jay-Z or James Joyce.
Yeah. Which era of rap music?
Oh, mid-90s, kind of golden
really?
Era. Yeah,
very
would you be
so.
An East or a West Coast man? Come the rap wars, which side would you be on?
I think... Back then, when it was happening, I would have been more. I would have sided more with the West. But now, when I go back and listen again, I would have went. I probably, maybe East.
Right,
Jimbo, what's yours?
I'll be West Coast rap from the '90s.
specific.
The weirdest one I've ever seen was a fella, some hairy fella, on doing the Clash album covers.
Hey,
that was his
really
specialist subject.
How specific can you get with this? Because I've never actually seen this program.
You've never seen Mastermind?
No, I've not. Like, I know what Mastermind is, but I've never sat down and watched it.
Interesting.
Maybe you should. Maybe very good.
All right. It's a shame Dave Farrar's not here, actually, because he would have been able to answer that question, because he's a quiz show veteran.
Yes,
of course.
Yes.
Now, I should mention, Juve won the Turin Derby again. Astonishing figures there. That's 10 straight Turin Derbies that Torino have not even been able to score in, although maybe they had a shout for a penalty in this. Maybe they did. El Cadori definitely had his foot clipped by Pirlo, but the problem was he then took a step or two and then executed the swan dive, and the ref went, no, I'm not having that.
I think he said afterwards that his diving wasn't good enough.
His diving wasn't good enough. There you go.
It was a nice goal by Tevez, wasn't it?
Oh, it was. Very nice goal. Yeah. He's back to goal, edge of the area. He's being marked. A little bit of room when he received the ball, but the defenders swarm in, and he just spins and shoots. But the velocity on that shot.
But still, Torino in the Europa League places still, aren't they?
They're not quite. They're just on the edge. Six. It's interesting because Inter in fifth place, and there's a whole heap of teams who are vying for that, including Milan, who had a big win, and the Gazette today calling it the kind of first defining win of the Seedorf era. They won at Sampdoria 2-0 with the goals from Adil Terapt and Rami. They're saying it's the new Moroccan Milan. Terapt indeed was man of the match. It's his second goal for the Rossoneri. He's having a super time, and he's looking very lively and mobile and stuff. Perhaps by comparison, I don't know.
Can we go back to Torino for a second?
Go back to Torino.
They've been really good to watch this season, haven't they?
They have, although I was disappointed with their performance in this game because they weren't good to watch in the way that
they didn't really
are.
Go for it, did they?
No. There was a lot of sitting back. And
If they were to qualify, would that be the first time they're in Europe since the Salenzi Benito Carboni era?
Well, they got to the quarterfinals of the UEFA Cup, as it was then.
Played Arsenal.
Was it Arsenal that they knocked them out that time? And that was the team with Pato Aguilera in it.
Yeah.
And I think the young Gigi Lentini as well. And if I'm not mistaken, the giant Brazilian Walter Casagrande, who looked a little bit like Andre the Giant out of great, great film Princess Bride.
I did once meet Andre the Giant.
Did you? Was he a lovely man?
Yeah, he was very big. I met all the wrestlers, like Jake the Snake Roberts and Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase.
Was this hanging out at Chris DeBurr's house or where?
No, it was my sister's confirmation, so it must be about 20 years ago. And we'd gone to this fancy hotel in Dublin. Well, I mean, I don't know if it's fancy now, but it was then. I think it's called the Gresham. And we'd booked a table.
Barry's shaking his head.
We'd booked a table there, and there was all this kind of furore outside, and we didn't realise why. But when we went in, all the wrestlers were there. I think I was quite a big wrestling fan at the time.
Now, we haven't done the relegation situation, but what, Sean?
What was your quiz show called again?
Oh, Grand Slam. Grand Slam, listeners. Look for it on YouTube. It's still there. Me and Carol Vorderman. Well, Carol Vorderman in brackets with me. And, it never got recommissioned, that, strangely.
Well, that was the champion of all the other quiz shows.
Yeah, the pitch was... to get a lot of these programs made in the crazy world of TV, you need to find an idea that's been done a lot of times, then throw in a novelty twist. And these fellas came up with two novelty twists. One was the fact that they would call in all the greatest quiz masters from Mastermind and 15 to 1 and all those things, and produce a kind of sort of decathlon of quizzing that tested all the various attributes that you would find in the other shows, and then have a Grand Slam winner at the end, which would be the ultimate quiz machine. And the second twist that they had was that the prize money would actually be contributed by the contestants themselves, who, if they thought they were in with a chance, would have to pony up and put their money where their mouth is if they thought they were the number one quizzer. So they didn't have very much prize money. That was the thing. And it was all right. But and they had a third gimmick, which that was the whole thing would be presented like it was a sports show. So you had a presenter with a kind of stats person saying, well, I think based on the numbers, you've got to look at this guy or that guy. And bizarrely, I was the stats person.
I'm interested, though. Surely with a quiz show, you either know the answer or you don't know the answer. I'm interested in all the various genres of quizzes going. Surely it's...
Well, you could have, you know, the Krypton factor, yeah, where you have to make the modelly thing. And
you got your
anagram. Why the hell wasn't Vorderman the stats man? That's her thing, numbers.
Well, she was a bigger name, so she was the presenter.
More importantly, she's a woman.
Well, yeah. It's the stats person.
Right. Well, anyway, I think we've digressed long enough, eh, listeners? Because we haven't touched on the relegation situation. Well, we have a bit, actually, because we did talk about Newcastle-Aston Villa, which means that Newcastle are finally on 40 points, so they're pretty much safe now. Aston Villa, not safe yet. It's down to it, and it looks like it might take quite a few. It might take 40 points this year, do you think, Sean?
Average over the last 10 years, I think, has been 37.
Right.
I think 40 is pushing it a bit.
Okay.
But I still think everyone from Swansea are in 12th are still very much in the mix.
You need to score goals, famously, don't you, in a relegation scrap? And Hull can. Hull can score goals with Shane Long and Nikita Jelovic.
Well, they've only scored 29 this season. But,
well, yeah,
I do,
but they've only had them in the last.
I mean, when they bought those two, I wasn't completely convinced. Certainly Jelovic had barely scored at all in, you know, in a year and a bit. And Shane Long's got talent, but I didn't think he was anything special. But they're working well together. And they were, I mean, the way they dismissed Cardiff, who are looking shockingly poor at the moment, was impressive.
Yeah, I think Jelovic and Long dovetail well, because Long does a lot of running, but is not particularly potent in front of goal, whereas Jelovic doesn't do a huge amount of running, but is very good in goal. Front of goal.
West Ham can score goals. They had a big victory over Southampton, which has lifted them all the way up to 10th place. Wow. And how about Fulham? Ian, what did you make of Felix Magath's first
Yeah, I think they did okay.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, Stekelenburg got a bit of stick for that mistake, but it's probably worth noting that he pulled off a couple of good saves from Brunt. I think there was two efforts from Brunt, so he did keep them in the game a bit as well.
Right. Well, Barry, unless you got anything else, I'll finish off with Norwich Spurs.
No, not really, apart from the fact that West Brom's late equaliser ruined an already miserable afternoon for me, because one of the guys who was laughing at my expense at the Emirates all afternoon was a West Brom fan. The only thing keeping me going was the fact that Fulham were beating them.
Well, sorry to hear that, Barry. Let's finish off anyway with Norwich Spurs, a terrific result for poor old underfire Chris Hughton and Norwich fans everywhere, like our very own Paul McKinney's. But Spurs fans on the warpath. On the warpath, as Tottenham failed to score for the first time under Tim Sherwood in the league, and he fails to bring Christian Eriksen off the bench, and as such is denounced as tactical incompetent, etc.
I can see that, and I thought Spurs were very poor. In Sherwood's defence, and you know, he has won 7 and drawn 2 of his 11 games in charge, which is pretty decent. I mean, it was one of those games, to be honest, where I was sort of half watching when not a lot seemed to be happening, certainly in the first half.
Who would have thought a game featuring Ricky van Wolfswinkel and Roberto Soldado would turn out not to be a goals fest?
Absolutely. I mean, that was Norwich's first goal in 312 minutes, I think. You know, I think they'd now won 5 Premier League games by 1-0, so that was, you know, wasn't a great shock.
Well, it was a big win for them, but does it help them that much? Because let's just remember their last 4 games of the season are Liverpool, Man United, Chelsea and Arsenal.
Well, they're 4 points clear, so it clearly does help them. But, I mean, you could throw a blanket over those 8 teams. I mean, clearly it helps them because they're now 4 points clear.
Right.
But they're not safe yet.
Well, clearly not. What about Tim Sherwood? Is he safe with all these rumours of Dutch folk coming in and taking his hard-earned place on the bench?
Well, I would imagine if they don't qualify for a big cup that he will be out of a job, and Louis van Gaal seems to have intimated that he's already been approached with a view to taking over.
Frank de Boer, another man who's supposedly been contacted. Well, that would certainly be an interesting Premier League, wouldn't it, with Felix Magath at Fulham and Van Gaal at Spurs. Anyway, ever entertaining, the Premier League and the wide world of football. But that's where we come to the end of our Monday jaunt through it. We'll be back on Thursday with a look at what happened midweek and what might happen at the weekend. So have yourself a super time. Until then, many thanks to Barry, to Ian, and to Sean for joining us today, and producer Ben, and we'll speak to you soon.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag and drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today. No credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code Guardian.